The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students in the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by the Ducos today, Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. Guys, we are sitting here in the Final Four, and we have a team from Alabama in the Final Four, not named Auburn. Nathan, it's the Alabama Crimson Tide. You did not think they'd be here. I didn't think they'd be here, considering the way the end of the season with that 102 points allowed to Florida losing in the SEC tournament. But we're sitting here. They're winning. What has the Crimson Tide done at this point to get to the Final Four and beat teams like UNC and Clemson along the way?
I think it's an uptick in defense. You look at the defense you're playing beforehand in the regular season and into the SEC tournament, very lackluster, not a lot of hustling, a lot of just poor rotations, poor communication, and they come to the tournament. I know the Charleston game is pretty misleading. They gave up 96 in that game, but really that's like in garbage time that Charleston scored like 26. Alabama really held them to around 70 with their starters in. So I thought that was a good start. And then you go to the Grand King game, only getting a 61 in the very sloppy game. Both teams didn't shoot well. But then you had the biggest challenge ahead of you, which was North Carolina. And I felt like Notre's game plan was down to a T, perfect, playing off some of the North Carolina's worst shooters. I guarantee they were hitting them the first half, but then you come into the second half and they just weren't able to hit again. And that allowed Armando Bacot really to be doubled and for the paint points to stop. And Alabama took advantage of that well. And then you look at the Clemson game and really in the first part of the first quarter, Alabama struggled from beyond the arc. And in that moment, you're like, Alabama has to step up on the defensive end. And that's exactly what they did. Clemson did not shoot well from outside. And they kept trying to work it into the paint. Nate Oates used a similar game plan to what they did against North Carolina for PJ Hall. And PJ Hall struggled at times. And he ended up fouling out of this game. I think a lot of frustration fouls should count because he couldn't get what he wanted to get in the paint. I think Alabama just, the uptick in defense is huge, but the offensive consistency has been there other than the Grand Canyon game. They've been able to put up 89 back-to-back games against two very physical teams and then 109 against the Charleston team that I thought played good defense at times, and then Grand Canyon just slowed the pace down. That was a real sloppy game. But Alabama really just took over with what they were able to do offensively and then what they have been able to do defensively up until this point in the tournament.
Yeah, Gray. So obviously both your teams are out. You had Auburn lose to Yale, and then you had what could have been the worst thing you could imagine. UNC loses to Alabama. What happened to UNC in that second half that kind of gave Alabama the way to get to the Elite Eight and then now the Final Four? What happened with Hubert Davis and the Tar Heels?
Well, I saw some weird lineups out there in the second half. I thought North Carolina had a great game plan to come in to the first half, and we're playing really well offensively outside of, RJ Davis just couldn't hit a shot. You know, credit Nate Oates and putting the length of Rylan Griffin on RJ Davis instead of a guy like Estrada or Sears, somebody like that, where RJ could maybe get by him and then get to the rim. They put a guy, they put a guy who's a lot longer on him, so it really bothered RJ Davis. But the Heels were still able to control the game offensively, with guys like Elliot Cadeau and Seth Trimble shooting the ball really well from outside, which you haven't seen. And then guys like Harris Ingram and Cormac Ryan, which we said on the last podcast, if those two guys get going offensively, they can go, and they can go as far as they wanted to. But then you saw the second half, not only Alabama came out and took control, right as the start, Alabama had guys step up. Obviously, Grant Nelson stepped up huge, but some weird lineup and some defensive matchups from Hubert Davis. I think Hubert would really look back. I think the only way you can look back on that game as a North Carolina fan and as a if you're Hubert Davis is, why did we go away from what was working in the first half? I don't understand why they went away from Elliot Cadeau, on the ball, being a primary ball handler. They kind of made RJ Davis do that in the second half, which, just made him, even worse. That's because, first of all, that's not the position he's been playing all year. It's not the position that he's had success in. and you Ryland Griffin stayed on RJ Davis the entirety of the second half. It just got him made. It was a mess. It was a mess in the second half, but you credit Alabama for stepping up down the stretch. Now, talking about for Alabama, three things needed to happen for Alabama to advance to the Final Four. And yeah, I could have told you this in the middle of the year. I could have told you this right after the SEC tournament loss to Florida. Could have told you this at the beginning of the year. Three things needed to happen. Obviously, Nathan nailed it on the first one. The defense had to be better. The hustle had to be better on that end. If you got the consistency that you get on offense, on the defensive end, and you complete a 40-minute game every single time, instead of just, oh, we're only playing hard defense for 10 minutes or just the first half, the second half, that sort of thing. Alabama has done that. Three-pointers got to go down. Alabama lives and dies through the three. The three-pointers have been unbelievable from this team recently. I mean, genuinely looks like it got hot at the exact right time. And then I think the last thing that specifically in the North Carolina and Clemson game for Alabama is they needed other guys to step up offensively. You know, you can't just run through Mark Sears. Mark Sears is incredible. And I think he's the best player left in this tournament. But you can't just run your offense through Mark Sears. And that's what they did most of the year. And a lot of times it worked, you know, because he's a great player. But it wasn't going to work down the stretch of the NCAA tournament. You had to have guys step up. That's exactly what happened. Ryland Griffin stepped up in both. Aaron Estrada, really, in that North Carolina game. Obviously, Grant Nelson down the stretch of the Carolina game. Stevenson in the Clemson game really stepped up huge. This Alabama team is coming up into what we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I was extremely disappointed with the coaching from Hubert Davis in that second half, like you were, Gray. I mean, to have Paxson Wojcik play almost the entire second half, he hasn't been in the lineup consistently since like the first month of the season. And you have guys like Elliot Cadeau and Seth Trimble, who played amazing in the first half, riding the bench. I know Elliot Cadeau is a freshman, and maybe Hubert Davis said, hey, he's not really built for this moment yet. Maybe that was the thought process or something. Or maybe it's because he can't shoot, but he proved in the first half he can shoot. So I didn't understand that at all. RJ Davis, obviously, like you said, Gray, was struggling with Ryland Griffin on him. But I do want to say RJ Davis had a lot of open shots and a lot of shots that he usually makes in rhythm. But with Ryland Griffin on him and him not seeing those shots go down, it was a struggle for him. And similar to what you said with Mark Sears, you can't rely on RJ Davis to carry you every game. Yeah. And with North Carolina, that's what it kind of felt like in this game was, hey, RJ Davis isn't good, isn't going good. What can we do? Armando Bacot did okay. He missed that big dunk at the end, which Nathan can probably agree was the momentum shifter that kind of gave Alabama that run. Harrison Ingram, I don't think was as aggressive as he needed to be. Felt like he was sort of timid at times to get aggressive with the guys that were guarding him. And Cormac Ryan, I felt played the best basketball since the Duke game. I felt like he should have got more touches. I'm not sure why he didn't. It felt like he was getting a touch maybe every four possessions on the three-point line. Felt like maybe the offense should have, at that point, started running through Cormac Ryan, as crazy as it is to say. But he was heating up. He was like, I want to say he missed like 2 3-pointers the entire game. So obviously he had found something. He had played against Alabama before. So the coach, Hubert Davis, in that game, for me, resembled a lot what happened in the Kansas game in the national championship a few years ago, where Hubert had this lead going into halftime, and then the second half come out flat, and you just fall apart. That's got to be something that Hubert's going to have to change going forward. If he's going to want to win these big games and these big moments. But then you look at Alabama, y'all pointed it out greatly with the defense needed to step up. That defense all regular season was atrocious. It was hard to watch, but they've turned it up at the right time. They've, like Nate Oates said, guarded for 40 minutes, four straight games in the tournament. So kudos to them for doing that. But in the Clemson game, there was a stretch starting at the 7:47 mark in the second half. Joe Girard makes a three-pointer to bring the game within three, 59-56. 10 seconds later, Ryland Griffin makes a three to make it into a six-point game. Joe Girard answers again with another three-pointer, brings it back to three. Darren Stevenson makes another three-pointer, and then Ian Sheffield misses a three-pointer. Their Mark Sears hits that huge three-pointer, basically the logo range. That was the big difference for Alabama there was every time Clemson answered, Alabama had just another answer for them. And Mark Sears at the end of that game was unconscious from the three-point line. It was just everything Alabama needed at that point was Mark Sears had to step up, and he did. There was hop jumpers. He was getting open off the ball. I mean, Mark Sears, while Jaren Stevenson and Nick Pringle had a lot to do with that game, when the lights were the brightest, Mark Sears stepped up when he needed to. So I think you have to credit a lot to what happened to that game for Mark Sears being the veteran leader that this team has needed all along.
Yeah, I think that really goes back to what we were saying at the beginning of the year and even like midway through, Alex, and when we were making our original Final Four predictions. What it comes down to in March is guard play and how good your guards are and how they can step up in games. The number of teams I saw fall apart through the tournament just did not have guards that could take over. I believe that's the reason that Alabama's gotten so far. And I know you look at the rest of the teams left and you're like, well, that doesn't really make sense. I would say UConn just has so many talented guards. You can't really just pick one to put ahead, but of course they have Donovan Quingan. Purdue has a freak monster in Zach Edey and 7-4, but you can't forget about Braden Smith and what he and Fletcher Warder and what they've been able to do. And then you have NC State. While DJ Burns might have been the huge attraction, DJ Horn also provides a lot. So I feel like there's a lot of guards throughout the tournament that have stepped up that might not have been had the spotlight on them because they are shadowed by these impressive, huge, big men that are just freaks of nature.
100%. And to the opposite of your point, Nathan, and I'm going to hate saying this again, but teams that didn't have the efficient guard play coming into the tournament, you see where they were. I mean, I'm going to bring up Kentucky first. I know Kentucky has NBA guards, but they were not playing as well as they should have been playing into the March. Look what happened to them. Auburn had extremely inexperienced guards, really, really good forwards, really, really talented team. Obviously, coming up into the tournament, super hot after winning the SEC tournament. But the guard play, just Yale had better guard play, and they lost. And then, you just look down the list. It's all about having good, efficient, and really good shooting guards in this time of year. And if you've got that, you can go as far as they can take you.
And I think the big thing nowadays is the experience because like Kentucky, you can have all these five-star guards, freshman guards, but if you don't have the experience, you're not going to win in March now. I mean, Alabama, really experienced. Mark Sears, a senior. Aaron Estrada, a graduate. Nick Pringle, a senior. Grant Nelson, a senior. UConn, they have a lot of senior leadership. Cam Spencer, Tristan Newton. I mean, they have those guys. NC State, I believe DJ Burns is a senior.
He's been in the league for a while.
DJ Horn is a senior. I mean, they have Diarra, Morsell. All those guys are juniors and seniors. And then Purdue, Zach Edey, obviously a senior. Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, older guys. So when you look at who the Final Four teams remaining are, is they have experienced players and good guards to back that up. So that's what's going to be coming down to in March going forward is you're going to have experienced guards. You can't just have these 4 and 5 star freshman, sophomore guards. You have to have experienced guard play to win these games.
Yeah. We sat here last year, Alex, when Alabama got defeated by San Diego State. And that was definitely probably the most talented team Alabama's had to this point, including this year. And you really break it down and you wonder why things didn't work out the way they were supposed to. And it goes back to the inexperience. And a lot of these teams, like you mentioned, Kentucky, they're inexperienced. They weren't efficient when it counted. I felt like Duke was one of those teams before, but they came into the tournament and they really just matured as a team and they built a lot of chemistry. And up until the NC State game, they were playing good basketball. So it just comes down to how experienced your team is. And a lot of the methods, like I would take UNC in this and most blue blood schools, the way they recruit talent, that's usually one and done. It doesn't work anymore because you don't have time to install chemistry. You don't have time for these players to kind of build with each other. And that kind of leads to upsets in first rounds like Kentucky and like Purdue in most years before they were experienced. So that's just how March is. And it's kind of contradictory because we have NIL in place. So I think we'll start seeing teams be more experienced because the players have an option to be paid. But beforehand, before all of NIL took over, that's just how it was. And that's how it is this year.
Yeah, so you look at the Final Four here, guys. UConn playing Alabama and then NC State playing Purdue. NC State's the lone 11 seed here, the quote-unquote Cinderella. I don't know if you can consider them Cinderella because like you pointed out last week, they won the ACC tournament. They have been playing amazing basketball. So what has NC State done to this point to get to the Final Four and play a team like Purdue?
They look just like their 83 team, by the way. My dad and I were watching them play, and we've been watching them play since the ACC tournament. I mean, if O'Connell doesn't hit that three to beat Virginia in the quarterfinals, they probably fire their coach and they're sitting at home right now. Instead, they're on their way to Phoenix to play in the Final Four after winning the ACC tournament and winning four straight games and winning that region. I think they are incredibly balanced. I think they're the second most balanced team on this in this Final Four behind UConn because of how experienced DJ Burns is. His scoring in the post is unmatched. I don't think there was a player in the entire tournament that could match his scoring in the post, especially at a guy like 6'9". But their guard play has also been very, very good. We just talked about it. DJ Horn, O'Connell, I keep forgetting the real tall, skinny guy's name, who looks just like Thurl Bailey. I mean, they look just like their 83 team, with Jim Valvano, Derek Wittenberg, and Lorenzo Charles, and those guys. They've been playing great basketball. I'm really excited to watch that game versus Purdue. I'm a little scared because the officials are going to give Edie every single call. He will shoot 30 free throws in this game, especially being guarded by DJ Burns, because Burns is just going to move him out of the way. But I think they are a team that they're going to go as far as they want to, because they're playing the best basketball right now.
Yeah, I talk about DJ Burns a lot. And Alice, I know when you were coming off the loss, when UNC was coming off the loss to NC State and it was still fresh, and you talk about how much you hate DJ Burns because of what he plays. Well, DJ Burns is pretty undersized to play the center position. He is at 6'9", but he is 275. He is built. He is strong, and he uses his size to his advantage. And his finesse around the rim is what makes him a great player. He doesn't rely on just his unintangibles. He puts in work every single time he's on the court, and it's very surprising. He has worked on his mid-range shot as on the Duke game. He was able to space the floor a little bit and back him into the mid-range, and they just weren't going to be able to guard him. And that's kind of how Duke got picked apart late, and that's how NC State ended up winning the game. So you got to give DJ Burns a lot of credit, but then you also got to flip around and say McConnell has offered a lot of three-point shooting and versatility, and then, of course, what Horn's been able to do when they needed him to step up, he has been there. So NC State's a very finished team. Definitely not up to like UConn's standpoint. But as far as chemistry, they have a ton and they play together so well. And it's just like, if you were able to complete a puzzle, I mean, that's a finished product.
Yeah. Now flipping over to their matchup here, being Purdue, the one seed, a lot of people had Purdue losing early in the tournament just because these past few years, they have continued to lose to these double digit seeds, but another matchup with the double digit seed in the Final Four had the chance to lose to them. But what has Purdue done this far to once again get to this point like NC State has and sort of fight those demons of, hey, we can't get past the first two rounds playing these double-digit seeds?
Shoot free throws over and over again. I really don't like Tennessee. I don't like Tennessee basketball. I would never root for Tennessee basketball, but I sat there watching that Elite Eight game just praying for Dalton Connect to make another three or another three or another three. That way, when Edie goes to the line with free throws, you know, Connect still scoring more. Tennessee is still gaining on Purdue. I'm really impressed with Braden Smith. He is their leader. I think he's by far their best player. He's by far the most skilled player. He's a good shooter. He really brings out the defense. He's a really good rebounder, and he loves to push the break. And that's when Purdue's good. I think Purdue is a much better team when they're in the fast break and when they're moving their offense and not just handing it to Zach and letting him throw up that horrible hook shot. I think they need to start using Zach as more of a defensive premise. They don't really use him that way on the defensive end. Yes, he's 7'4". He's going to get blocks. He's going to get two blocks a game because he's 7'4". But there are players in this tournament, including at least two or three left in the Final Four, that if they were 7'4", they would average 8 blocks a game because their timing's better on the defensive end. I'm not impressed with Edie at all. really at all. I think DJ Burns is a much better center. And I think Klingon is a million times better. But I'm really impressed with Braden Smith. I think they're going to beat NC State because Edie will go to the line enough for them to win. But I think they're going to win because the matchup between DJ Horn and Braden Smith is a fantastic one. Two very athletic guards who are pure scorers and also pure passers, which I'm excited to see.
You know, great. I think we were like all on the same team watching Purdue. I hate the way Purdue plays. They play so slow, methodical, and it's always working into the paint, working to Zeki. That is their main reliance. And when you break it down, Purdue against Tennessee was not hitting their three-point shots, and they struggled a lot in the offensive end. The only problem is Tennessee would go and take a stupid mid-range shot, and they wouldn't hit that. So it just kind of balanced itself out there. With Purdue and against NC State, I think this is a matchup that is just poor for NC State because you had to guard a guy in Zeki. I don't think NC State can keep up offensively because Edie's going to get to the line. That's just how it is. That's how it's always been. He is 7'4", and he plays very physical. And for some reason, that means he doesn't get called on the defensive end as much, but he gets all the calls on the offensive end. And I can sit here breaking down his game. He's not very skilled at the rim. He can only go to his left. He can only go to his right, and he struggles with his left. He can't space the floor. He doesn't know how to shoot. He has poor passing ability. When he gets double teamed, he kind of panics a little bit. So I've seen times where you can attack Zeki and he will fall apart. Tennessee didn't do it well enough. And I thought Rick Barnes had a good plan in place. It just did not work out because Tennessee was not able to make their shots down the stretch. I don't think NC State will be able to do that either. I think Purdue's going to end up winning. But if Purdue matches up against a team like Alabama or UConn, they should be scared because both these teams can hit threes and they can run the offense break very fast. And for Edie, he struggles to run. And when he gets tired out, he kind of just stops hustling. So that's just what's going to happen. But this is a great matchup for Purdue. And unfortunately, I like NC State, but I don't think they're going to be able to get it done.
Yeah, just to give you a stat here, guys, with Zeki Edie versus Tennessee, he had 16 fouls drawn and shot more free throws than he did field goals. So the refs really do give him the benefit of the doubt. What a joke. I will say there a lot of the foul calls against him or people fouling him are actual fouls, but there's a lot of the time where these refs are something else. He'll just like tackle somebody on the defensive end of the court and there's no call. And then there was a couple times in the game where the dude sat the entire offensive possession in the painted area. I sat there and watched like four or five videos where I would just
16
one
seconds.
Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. Four miss. Oh my. And at one point he got to like 10 Mississippi, one possession. I was like, are you going to blow your whistle? Or are you just going to let him be Charles Barkley and just sit there and pound it? And just like, what are we doing? There's no skill with what anything Zach Edey does besides maybe shooting the free throw. That takes some semblance of skill to do that because we see big men, they go to the line a lot, may struggle to shoot the free throw, but he shoots it okay. But like Nathan said, no left hand. He has no outside touch at all. I mean, I hate people coming on these podcasts and saying, yeah, Zach Edey is going to be a first round pick.
Oh my God, no.
I don't think so. I really don't.
The pace in the NBA would be so fast that he would not be able to play more than 10 minutes a night because he's not going to be able to keep up. He's going to get gassed.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, he can be this like gadget where we can come on the defensive end of the court and just match up against these dominant centers in the league. I'm like, do you think he's going to stop Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid?
The same people also said that Taco Fall was a starting center in the NBA.
It's just, if he wasn't 7'4", we would not be sitting here talking about Zach Edey at all.
No. Purdue wouldn't be in this situation.
It's just something. Let's talk about UConn here, guys, and their absolute blowout against Illinois in the second half. I believe it was 28-23 going into halftime. And then UConn came out, went on a 30-0 run, and Illinois, it was done. Terrence Shannon was Casper the Friendly Ghost for them, did not show up at all. Damask did the best he could. I feel bad for him. He was I think that was one of the best games he's played in Illinois uniform, but it's unfortunate when your star player decides he wants to be Niles Vanish for them. But what did UConn do that, I guess, scares you, Nathan, going into the Alabama game?
Well, I thought they capitalized on the defensive end. When they needed to the most, they stopped Illinois from trying. I mean, Illinois had a stupid game plan going in. Let me start with that. They tried to attack Don McLean in the paint over and over and over again. And Don McLean was like, all right, I'm just going to get block after block after block. And defense basically turned into offense for UConn. UConn just in transition, there was no stopping them. They were dunking the ball, at throwing alley-oops, whatever they needed to do, threes in transition. Illinois, as soon as they came out in the court inside, they were going to tie Donald McLean. That's when it was over. Illinois did not utilize their outside shooting. I thought Illinois coming into the game would look at that matchup and say, hey, we need to take advantage of the perimeter while we can, because that's how we're going to hurt them. And instead, they attack probably the best defender in the court. But that's besides the point. UConn just plays so well on both sides of the ball. I mentioned this the other day. UConn is a lot like if Tennessee played as good on the offensive end as they did on the defensive end. Because Tennessee's defense is hounding, and they are all over the place. But when it comes to offensive end, you can forget about they rely too much on Nolan Connect. But UConn has so many scorers that it's hard to just limit on one person. You can't stick your best defender on him and say, oh, well, we got it on the defense end now. So UConn scares me in the sense that they can just create offense off of defense, and they do it so well. But what I did see in the early stages of the Illinois-UConn game, UConn struggled to shoot the ball from three, and that happens sometimes. If it happens again versus a team like Alabama, you see how well Alabama's been shooting the ball recently. If they get off to a hot start, it's going to be a closer game than people think. And a lot of people want to go ahead and crown UConn the national champion and say they don't have to play these last two games because it doesn't matter. We've heard them compared to NBA teams. I said that they could be in the NBA playoffs. It comes down to the point that it's a joke. These are college athletes. They are not primed and ready for the NBA yet. I think a few of them would be playing in the NBA. I think a few could start, but this team has weaknesses. And while people don't want to realize that and look at it, you can break down multiple other games and find those. And if any coach is going to be able to do that, I think Nate as well. He is a mastermind of breaking down film and being able to find weak points. He did it against North Carolina and he did it against Clemson. So I think it's going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, watching that UConn Illinois game, it was a great first half. Obviously, struggles from three, I would say, but then the second half started, and I felt like I needed to call the police because Illinois had just died, and UConn was just killing them, and they just kept doing it. Look, UConn is incredible. I would say the best thing about this UConn team, and I've watched them very little this year, because why would I watch a Big East game when I could watch an SEC or an ACC or even a Big 12 game? But UConn can create matchups that gives them the advantage no matter who they play and no matter who's on the court at that time. That's how many athletes they've got. That's how many scorers they've got. That's how deep they are. They have so many strengths. If they shoot the ball well and are efficient on the offensive end, they're unbeatable. Their transition offense is as good as 2009 North Carolina was. Illinois would miss a shot or make a shot, and UConn would just get a transition dunk or an easy layup for somebody like Klingon or one of their athletes or one of their really good guards like Newton or Castle or Cam Spencer. They are so efficient. They're methodical on the defensive end. I don't think they're as good as a team like Houston was or Tennessee or somebody like that, because they don't guard the ball like that, which I do think that's going to be an adjustment that Dan Hurley has to make for the Alabama game. They're going to really have to get up and pressure the ball, even no matter who's got the ball. But I mean, their off-ball defense is incredible. When knowing when you've got Donovan Clingan behind you, I mean, there's a reason Auburn's 2021 defense was so well. Knowing that you've got Walker Kessler, who's averaging 3-4 blocks a game behind you, you can take more risk on ball. You can jump the passing lane a little more, knowing that, oh, if even if I miss this or the guy gets by me because he's got a step, I've got a straight eraser behind me. He's not scoring over him. And that's what Illinois kept trying to do. Just like Nathan said, I don't know why. But they kept going right at him, and he kept sending them back. And then he'd send it back, and then UConn would get a dunk literally 3 seconds later because they're transitioning. They run lanes better than I've ever seen. It's incredible. They're an unbelievable team. I think it's going to have to take a perfect. I think it's going to take a perfect game from Alabama to win this game in the Final Four. I am going to pick UConn, but I think if there's a team left that beats UConn, it's Alabama. It's not Purdue. It's definitely not NC State. It's Alabama because of the way Alabama's shooting threes, because of the uptick in Alabama's defense. I love this matchup. I think it's going to be a fantastic game. I can't wait to watch it. But also on the other end, UConn is by far the best team that Alabama has played. I think UConn would have dominated the SEC this year because Nathan said it best. I mean, they're just like Tennessee on the defensive end, but they don't rely on a player on the offensive end. They run offense, and it's so efficient and it's so good. So if UConn shoots the ball well, I think it's definitely UConn. I do think it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people think, though.
Yeah. So y'all kind of giving a little bit of a preview of who y'all have going to the championship here, but looking at NC State, Purdue, who wins the matchup? But what has to happen if somebody like NC State's going to get to the championship and beat Purdue?
I'll say I do have Purdue winning that game, but I think if NC State is going to win, I think they need to shoot 50% or better from the 3-point line, and they need to stay out of foul trouble. If DJ Burns gets in foul trouble, they're in major trouble. Same thing with DJ Horn. They've got to have scorers out there at all four. They need to have shooters out there at all four positions outside of DJ Burns, really space Purdue out, make Zach Edey, you know, come out and guard DJ Burns in the short corner and the elbow or something like that, get him out of the paint, that sort of thing. And then just really, really bang with him down low on the offensive end, make him uncomfortable. Zach Edey hasn't seen a guy like DJ Burns all year, you know, because the only teams that's seen a guy like DJ Burns are teams that's played NC State. So I think it's going to be a good matchup. I'm excited about those two going at each other. Again, I think it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people think. But I think Purdue will just shoot enough free throws to win the game.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Purdue here as well. But if NC State were to win, I think the main things that has to happen, or what I would personally do, I would double Zach Edey, make him make the right read, because that is something he has continuously struggled with throughout the season. And you're going to have to force a guy in Braden Smith and Fletcher Warrior to hit their shots. And if it's like the Tennessee game, they don't hit their three-pointers, another answer to this, you have to box out. You have to box out. And DJ Burns, I don't think will have as much of a problem because of his size and his strength. So I think that benefits them well. But you have to box out. You have to get rebounds. And then I think you're going to have to take advantage of Zach Edey not being able to run the court as much. And you're going to have to play faster on the offensive end. And I don't know if NC State is capable of that. And if they're going to play under control fast, I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's just something that has to happen in order for them to get this win. But like you said, Gray, Zach Edey gets to the free throw line more than he even attempt shots in the paint. It's a fact. And Purdue has two very good guards in Fletcher Warren and Braden Smith, and they are making their shots, they are making good passes, and if they're playing good on the defensive end, then it's going to be Purdue.
I think, like Gray pointed out, the big thing is going to be foul trouble if NC State can stay out of it, because they only really run about three big men, that being Burns, Middlebrooks, and Diarra. If you have two of those guys go down with foul trouble, you're going to be in for a world of hurt against Zach Edey, because you're just going to have that one guy to play basically the entire game, or sort of be the primary defender on Zach Edey. If somebody like DJ Burns somehow gets three fouls in the first half and picks up that fourth one, early on in the second half. I mean, they're going to have to stay out of foul trouble, and that's not going to be entirely on NC State, but the refs are going to have to officiate this game very well. They're going to have to be much better than they've been the entire tournament, because if these refs played as Aki's hand, NC State's going to have almost close to zero chance to win the basketball game, because he's going to go to the line and nail these free throws again and again, and NC State's not going to be able to keep up. But I'm going to go a little bit different here. As much as I hate to say NC State plays in the national championship as a North Carolina fan, I think NC State gets past Purdue and plays in the national championship, because DJ Burns is a much more skilled big man than Zach Edey. He's dominated in the post all year, made the right read in the tournament again and again. DJ Horn, while he did struggle in the Oakland game, he has played pretty good basketball. O'Connell, he's played really good. If those guards can get going, I think they can dominate much better than somebody like Brain Smith and Fletcher Lawyer can. If Purdue doubles the post, DJ Burns is going to make the right read. If NC State doubles the post, Zach Edey, I don't trust. So that's why I'm going to go NC State here to make the national championship. So looking at the other matchup, guys, UConn and Alabama. Once again, who wins the matchup? What's it going to take for the underdog in Alabama to get the win?
For this one, I think it's a little bit different. I think Alabama keep playing the way you played these last four games. If you do that, you're going to have a chance. Don't revert back to, you know, and not getting back on defense, you know, just allowing silly buckets, you know, and not taking advantage of mismatches. You know, don't revert back to what you're doing prior to the NCAA tournament. Keep playing the way that you've been playing. The three-pointers are going to fall for Alabama. I think UConn knows that. I think UConn's prepared for that. And I think you need to shoot it like you did against Clemson, especially in that second half, just like Alex was mentioning, that run where it was just three after three after three after three. I think Alabama's going to need two or three of those runs in this game to be able to win this game and advance to the national championship. For UConn, it's just going to be the exact same thing. Keep playing the way that you've been playing. Run the break. I know you know teams have been talking about, don't push with this Alabama team. Don't get in a crazy run up and down game with Alabama. I think if there's a team that can do that, it's UConn, because of how good they are in transition offense. They can score in transition just like Alabama can. So I think this is going to be a much more of a run up and down game than the first one will be with NC State and Purdue, which is why I'm more excited about it. I think that's a more fun brand of basketball. I'm excited about it. I think UConn wins this one close. I think it's Klingon makes an impact down the stretch. Big thing for Alabama, just like NC State, stay out of foul trouble. Really stay out of foul trouble. You cannot have Klingon out there being guarded by, you know, Grant Nelson, and Grant Nelson's got four fouls in the last 3 minutes. That's a dangerous game to be playing against UConn. But I'm going to go to UConn, but close.
Alex, I know you remember a few weeks ago when we went to Alabama's last regular season game versus Arkansas, and they went to overtime and they got the win, but it wasn't pretty. And if I would have asked you, would this team make the Final Four and get to this point, you probably would have laughed at me. You would have laughed in my face, and I probably would have laughed with you, because we were not playing our best brand of basketball there, and it just didn't look good. And then you go and continue on to the SEC tournament, it did not look good either. But these past four games have been completely different. It's been like a new season. The team has played with a lot of new energy. I've seen guys take over when they just kind of been quiet before. Guys like Jaren Stevenson, who should still be in high school right now. You have guys like Nick Pringle completely take over in the paint and get offensive rebounds. And a guy in Mohamed Diabate, who really you didn't expect to see in the lineup at all this season, and he has just come out of nowhere and played some crazy defense and been able to be physical. And then, of course, a guy in Grant Nelson, who we know what he was capable of, but he has finally reached that point. With that all being said, UConn, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. They are a very, very good team. And for them to get to this point, has been nothing short of insane. You talked about a number of teams that have won a national championship and then returned to the Final Four. Very few had done that. And this team plays a lot like Florida back in 2006, 2007, and into that 08 season. With that being said, UConn, I don't think they're as invincible as people say they are or think they are. They have weaknesses. They are certainly not a G League team. They're not an NBA team. And with that being said, I think that Alabama can take advantage of those weaknesses. I like Alabama in this matchup. And if Mark Sears plays the way he continues to play, he's going to be a problem for him. And not to mention that, but the other guys who have already stepped up need to continue playing the way they have played. I think Alabama is going to advance in the national championship. And I think it's going to be another shocker because no one's going to think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I look at this game. For Alabama to win this game, they're going to have to play close to perfect. They cannot start this game like the way they started against Clemson. I believe that they went down 26-13. If you start like that against UConn, UConn will run you out of the gym. There's no amount of three-point shooting or anything that can get them back against UConn the way they play defense and all that. So Alabama is going to have to start off really good. They cannot walk out of the gates. They have to run them down the court, match UConn's defensive prowess, and shoot the three ball really well. So Alabama's going to have to play close to a perfect game to beat UConn. And I think they can do that. I think somebody like Mark Sears is going to come out and start much better than he did against Clemson. I think he started at 0-7 against the Tigers there. And then I look at UConn. Like y'all both pointed out, they're not invincible. They're not going to be able to go, I believe it was 3-17 shooting the 3-point. Yeah, 3-17, like they did against Illinois shooting the three, and do that against Alabama and expect to win this basketball game. The guards for UConn did not play particularly well against Illinois. Tristan Newton did not make a field goal. Cam Spencer wasn't as good as he has been. Stephon Castle wasn't great. He had 2 points. So I look at the games these teams are coming off. I know UConn has had a lot better defensive game, but Alabama was shooting the ball really well in that game. A lot of guys have stepped up. So I think if guys like Mark Sears can play really well and you have that one or two guys that step up, whether that be Grant Nelson, Nick Pringle again, Jaron Stevenson, Rylan Griffin, Aaron Estrada, Latour Whitesell, if he comes back, he's supposed to be coming back. If two of those guys step up alongside Mark Sears, Alabama has a huge chance to win this game, because at the end of the day, I think Alabama has more players that when the lights get bright and they need a shot, are going to have the player to do that. I don't think UConn really has that one guy you look at, or that one or two guys you look at. I don't think Cam Spencer or Newton or Castle are anywhere close to somebody like Mark Sears, Aaron Estrada, and Ryan Griffin. So I think Alabama gets the win against UConn, but I do think it is close regardless of how each of these teams play, because UConn is going to get really defensive and Alabama is going to shoot the light, is going to shoot the three ball regardless if they're making it or not. So y'all have Nathan has Alabama and Purdue. Gray, you have UConn and Purdue, and I have NC State and Alabama. So we all have three different matchups here. Who do y'all have taking home the championship trophy here?
Okay, so UConn and Purdue, I think this is what the NCAA wanted from the very beginning. I think they wanted the two best bigs left in this, or really in the entire tournament, to match up on next Monday night. I think they love the redemption story of Purdue, of the losing to a 16 seed last year and then coming back and winning the championship the year after, just like they did with Virginia in the 2019 year. So I think they love that. I think the officials are going to do everything they possibly can to have that. So I'm going with Purdue because as much as I would hate it, this Monday night, if we get to a UConn and Purdue game, it's going to be about foul trouble. It's going to be about depth. And it's going to be the Klingon versus Edie show. Whoever makes the most free throws. And it's going to be a horrible brand of basketball. And I would much rather watch NC State versus Alabama on that Monday night. But I think they just can't get away from that redemption story. They can't get away. They really want Zach Edey to not use the ladder cutting down the nets, because that'd be a great Instagram post for them. And I think that gets the better of UConn. And I'm going with Purdue.
Nathan?
Greg was very mathematical about that. I like that. he hit deep with that, with the Virginia story. I thought about that a few days ago, but that's something else right there.
Yeah, he's a little too close to that story.
Very close. Yeah. Very close.
Okay. Alabama and Purdue. This matchup has already happened back in December in Toronto. Purdue narrowly got the win. Zach Edey shot free throws like normal. So, I mean, you can go again any game. He's going to shoot a bunch of free throws. I remember the game. I remember watching it and how poorly Alabama struggled to shoot the ball. And this is back in early December. So this is when Alabama didn't know what to do on the defensive end. So whenever Alabama would miss a shot, they would not get back in transition, give up easy buckets. Even with that, I think they had the lead at the end of the half, and Purdue kind of played the style of play that Alabama wanted them to play, but they didn't. Alabama didn't display the defense they needed to display. Alabama's kind of on a revenge arc. They just got revenge against Clemson, who beat them at home early on in the season. And I think they would have probably taken care of Arizona, who also beat them early on in the season. And Purdue is the next team in the way, and they're actually the last team in the way in this scenario. Could Purdue keep up with the style of play of Alabama again? I think they could, but we all know who would struggle in that matchup, and that'd be Zach Edey, because he does not like to run. If this Alabama team knocks off UConn, they would already be very, very hot from three. And I like Purdue. I like the way they play defense at times, and I like the way they execute on the offensive end sometimes. But as far as majority of the time, I've seen Purdue's guards struggle on the defensive end. And Zach Edey, his timing's out of place. He struggles to get down the paint, and then he struggles to move around. It's like he's a brick wall in there, and he's just planted. And if Alabama were to take on Purdue again, I think it'd be hard for Alabama to stop a guy in Zach Edey. I think he'd get to the line. But Alabama is going to be able to outscore him simply because of the fact threes are going to be better than twos. So I'm going to take Alabama to win the national championship and knock off Purdue in a revenge fashion. But I'm not going to tell a lie here. If Zach Edey goes to the free throw line like he has been, I don't know. It could be completely different.
Yeah. I'm going to piggyback off Nathan here and say Alabama wins the national championship against NC State. I look at NC State, they're very similar to a team like North Carolina, where they're relying on their guard and DJ Horn. North Carolina relying on RJ Davis, and NC State has DJ Burns. North Carolina has Armando Bacot. So they played a team similar to this before, and they've won that game. So I think Alabama has prepared for this team. They've shoot the three ball immaculately better than NC State. NC State hasn't made over nine threes in this tournament, so. And I don't think they can keep up with North Alabama if they continue to make three-pointers the way they've been making them. And if Alabama continues to play defense the way they have, Rylan Griffin will take DJ Horn out of this game. If the big men for Alabama can stay out of foul trouble on DJ Burns, then that'll be a good thing for them there. But I think Alabama, too much firepower for a team like NC State. I think NC State's Cinderella run ends in the national championship, which is, I think it's a great run for them getting to that point. And I think Alabama cuts down the nets in Phoenix.
Can we not talk about the biggest outlier in metric history that would be if Alabama was to win the national championship? For a team not to play any defense whatsoever to just get all the way there and win the national championship. I don't know if y'all watch or have watched bracketed TikToks. How much y'all watch. But, you know, it's all this team has to be top 12 in week six of the AP poll and whatnot. This team has to be east of a certain point in Texas or something like that. Team needs to be high offensive and defensive efficiency.
The trapezoid of excellence or whatever it's called.
Trapezoid of excellence and whatnot. This team plays too fast. Well, if this team were to win the national championship, everyone would have a come apart because it would all just, all of these metrics would just seem like a lie and everyone would be up in arms. Gray, I know you would be because you're an Auburn fan and you kind of have this outside perspective of a team needs to play a certain way to win a national championship, but it would be pretty spectacular. I can't even fathom. I couldn't even fathom reaching the Final Four. I didn't think it was going to happen this year. Even though I picked this team to go to the Elite Eight, I didn't pick them to get this far. And the fact that I just picked them to win the national championship, honestly, it scares me a little bit because it had the reality of us being in the Final Four hasn't really set in for me. But like I said, it'd be absolutely insane. It would throw all metrics out the window. It'd be a very crazy day.
I don't think it matters what your team looks like in September, November, October, January, February. Whatever happens in the in your conference tournament and whatever happens in the first game of March Madness, that's the team you look at. I mean, you look at Alabama, could not play a lick of defense against Florida, the SEC tournament. But you're coming into the March Madness, and they're playing some of the best defense that I've ever seen them play. They're playing like the team that played defense last year. Their lockdown defense, if they play like that all season, Alabama probably, we probably be sitting here saying Alabama is a one or two seed. They wouldn't be saying, oh, we're a four seed here. But now they found this defense. They know it's important for this team all year to play defense for 40 minutes in a basketball game. And they've done that four straight games. So it's a whole different team. You look at NC State, same thing. This team was awful, awful. They've lost I think four or five games going to the ACC tournament. Won all those games, had that crazy shot against Virginia. And they're on this run too. So, like I said, it doesn't matter what your team looks like at the beginning of the year. All that matters is how you finish. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And all these teams, well, while teams like Alabama and NC State started after the season up and down, not so great, they finished this season really good, regardless if they win these games or not.
Yeah, I just want to make this point on Alabama. I think the way Alabama has played in the last four games, there has never been a better Alabama team. And you can say last year, like when they were really good during the SEC regular season or even the SEC tournament, they were blowing through teams last year. Brandon Miller was scoring 30 points. Noah Clowney was playing unbelievable. Mark Sears was playing great. The way this team is playing now, it blows them out of the water. Blows them out of the water because they're efficient on the offensive end. Obviously, ask Clemson, hey, three's better than twos, Clemson. you just lost because of it. But they've finally shown effort on the defensive end. And I know y'all can both say, because y'all both have watched every single Alabama game this year, that I have not. All year, they have the defensive talent. And they'll play 10 minutes of really, really good defense. But they never put it all together for a 40-minute game and never, kept it going. And when they would play very, very good defense, it would take all the air out of their offense. And they would just rely on jacking threes that they weren't making at the time. Now they're making those threes and playing outstanding on the defensive end. And you credit Nate Oates to that. You credit the players for that. This team is playing better than any Alabama team has in the past. And this team has the best chance to win the national championship than any other Alabama team has ever had.
I'll take it a step further, Gray. And I think this is probably going to be our final question because we're running a little low on time. Mm-hmm. Is Mark Sears the greatest player in Alabama basketball history?
Yes.
Yes. Alex?
I'll say he's the greatest player, but it's really hard because you have guys like Brandon Miller and Herb Jones, and there's a lot of guys before that that obviously we didn't get to watch. So it's hard for us to say, hey, Reggie King was better than Mark Sears. I never saw Reggie King play basketball for Alabama. So from what I've seen, I'd have to say Mark Sears is the best player to put on an Alabama jersey. Now, when we play at the NBA, like somebody these guys have, like Brandon Miller and Colin Sexton, that remains to be seen. But he's the best player at Alabama to play basketball.
I would have to agree, and I'd say Brandon Miller is probably the most talented, and Mark Sears is definitely the most skilled, and he's the greatest. And this run he has been on, I believe in that Clemson game, he hit like six or seven straight threes. That's yeah. video game stats right there. So he is the best player in Alabama history, in my opinion. And I've watched a lot of Alabama basketball.
Yeah, because it's the exact same thing from the Auburn perspective. Jabari Smith is by far the most talented player that has ever played at Auburn. And I think Pettiford will come in there and has, because he's like the second highest rated player.
Hold your horses now. Johan Trey Ordain Holloway have something to say about that.
That's very true. That's very true. But the best player at Auburn University is either Jared Harper or Bryce Brown.
I would say Jared Harper.
I would say Jared Harper too. I would say Jared Harper too, more consistent than Bryce Brown was throughout his career. Playing better at the time when Auburn made their run. So it's the exact same thing. Yeah, we're looking at success and we're looking at how you played in college, not how talented you are or how much potential you have to be at the NBA and the next level, that sort of thing. So that's why Nathan is pointing out Mark Sears is the best Alabama player ever.
Yep. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.